the Cultural Archives at the University of California here in Santa Barbara. It's in the Special Collections Department. Sal is past president of the National Association to Promote Latina Library Services, and his research and publications deal with Latino library science and archives. Sal, thanks for coming.
Okay, thanks for having me here. In my 18 years working with Chicano, also known as Mexican-American Special Collections, for me, working with the Lalo Guerrero songwriter, musician, composer, and his sons, Dan and Mark, to establish this Lalo Guerrero collection here at UCSB has been immensely satisfying. And this is a collection that chronicles the remarkable career of a man who, by now at the age of 86 years old, has entertained lovers of Chicano and Mexican music for six decades. The Lalo Guerrero collection represents the life of a composer, a musician, and a singer who is internationally recognized as the father of Chicano music. And Lalo is a trailblazer who has no peer in the history of Mexican-American. Eduardo Lalo Guerrero is a legendary figure among Mexican-Americans in the United States who began recording his recording career in 1938, recording over 700 songs throughout his very long career. And in the 1950s and 1960s, his music dominated the Latin American charts in both North and South America. And Lalo, as he is affectionately called, is truly bicultural and has sung and played most genres of Mexican and American music. The Tucson, Arizona native has written and sung his music in a wide variety of styles, including boleros, salsa, mambos, cha-cha, swing, corridos, rancheras. The latter is a sort of Tex-Mex country western musical style, as well as American 1950s pop. Now, Lalo was the first to bring swing and jitterbug to the Mexican-American audiences in the mid to late 1940s. Guerrero has played the guitar, and he's sung in films alongside Jane Russell, Robert Mitchum, George Raft, and Gilbert Rowland. And he serenaded the public alongside Frank Sinatra, Dinah Shore, Red Skelton, Milton Berle, and Hoagy Carmichael. He also co-hosted the Paul Rodriguez Show on Spanish language television, a popular talk variety show that aired nationally on Univision and throughout Mexico and Latin America. Now, Guerrero's work has widely influenced other well-known Chicano musicians such as Linda Ronstadt and Los Lobos. Extremely popular in the Spanish-speaking world, he had many hit songs on Spanish radio stations during the 1950s and 1960s. His many rewards include the prestigious National that was awarded to him in 1986 at a White House ceremony for a lifetime of creative achievement. And 16 years before the event, he had already been declared a national folk treasure by the Smithsonian. To this day, Lalo continues to take his music and his message to venues across the country and abroad, and in particular, he says that he really enjoys playing at colleges and universities. He's dedicated his life and his career to the definition and the enrichment of the Chicano experience. And if he's asked, he'll tell you that many of his compositions are based on personal observations. But in the process of doing just that, he's become a musical historian of a unique culture, a culture with roots in two worlds. Now, before I go any further, I'd like to tell you that this panel originally was going to have two speakers, Lalo's oldest son, Dan Guerrero, who is he's an accomplished television producer. He was going to talk about his dad's career, and then I was going to talk about the collection and its significance. So instead, for my talk this afternoon, I'll be interspersing my comments with some selected tracks from a taped interview with Lalo himself from a broadcast musical profile on Lalo taped by a colleague of mine, Pedro Arroyo, for his show on KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo. Now, this first segment begins with Lalo talking about his song, La Canción Mexicana, that he composed while he was still in his teens in Tucson. And it became wildly popular in Mexico, and it became such a standard in that country that it earned the distinction as the unofficial national anthem of Mexico. And it was first made famous in 1941 by the great Lucha Reyes.
Lalo had his first hit in Mexico and in the United States with his song Canción Mexicana, a ballad that pays tribute to Mexican music. This song was recorded by many of Mexico's leading vocalists of the 1930s and 40s. Canción Mexicana continues to be a standard in Mexican music to this day. The song also gave Lalo the first opportunity to showcase his songwriting skills. Lalo reflects on the impact that this song had on his career as a singer and songwriter.
The Canción Mexicana, I was still in the barrio where I was born and raised in Tucson. And at that time, it was probably 1930, 32, during the Depression. There was we didn't have any role models. Young Chicanos and Chicanas did not have role models of any consequence. It had been very close to the revolution that was that had just ended 10 years before. And the only role models we had were Mexican role models like Pancho Villa and Zapata and these people that we would hear about because we were still very young. We weren't into that history yet. But we knew that they were great men that that strived to get rid of oppression and injustice in Mexico. And the battle is still going on, by the way. But we needed role models living in the United States at that time, somebody we could relate to, we could be proud of, and there wasn't anybody around, so I thought I would write. Our music is the only thing that we had that we were proud of, the beautiful Mexican music of that time. And I wrote La Canción Mexicana, which was originally, the title was A La Canción Mexicana, which meant this is dedicated to Mexican music. And it was actually a tribute to the beauty and the happiness inspired by Mexican music. And I wrote this song, which is a medley of some of the most popular and beautiful songs of that period, which includes Cielito Lindo, Las Mañanitas Tapatías, El Mariachi de Mi Tierra, and towards the end, ends up with La Delita. But it all, between these songs, is a description of Mexican music and how it affected our lives and how proud we were of it. So it was a need for pride and self-esteem that inspired me to write it. And it was very successful because I traveled to Mexico City to look for a publisher or somebody that would be interested in recording it. And I was fortunate enough that there was a publishing house that liked that song. I had four songs that I had with me at the time, and they signed me for all four songs. But nothing ever happened with the other three. I never heard any more about them. But they did record Canción Mexicana with a great singer of that time, Lucha Reyes, and it became an instant hit nationwide in Mexico and, of course, through the Southwest, to the point where it still is a very popular song. It's a standard that has endured 50 years and is still sung and played by and recorded over and over by different artists over the different decades. That was the first one, successful one.
Hoy que lleno de emociones me encuentro con mi jarana. Voy a rendir homenaje a la canción mexicana. Voy a rendir homenaje a la canción más galana, la canción más primorosa que la canción mexicana.
Lalo's bilingual and bicultural.
Okay, during World War II, during this era, Lalo moved to San Diego. He joined the USO, and he toured throughout the country entertaining servicemen. He began entertaining in nightclubs and at military camps and at hospitals. And in the book Barrio Rhythm, Stephen Loza, he states that after World War II, there were many shortages in the music industry, and innumerable songs and melodies were imported from Mexico and Latin American countries, and that these imports include many of the hit songs of the 1940s, such as What a Difference a Day Makes and Green Eyes. Following the war, Lalo often performed in a nightclub in Los Angeles called La Bamba that was frequented by Hollywood luminaries. Eventually, he opened up his own club, Lalo's, in East Los Angeles that operated for about 14 years. A master at adaptation, Lalo soon appropriated the music of swing and recast it into a bicultural mode, creating songs such as Chucos Suaves and Marijuana Boogie that many years later were featured in Luis Valdez's 1978 hit film and also the musical Zoot Suit. Now, Luis Valdez's papers and the archives of the theater company that he founded, El Teatro Campesino, they were established in the California Ethnic and Multicultural Archives in 1985. And it was propitious, I think, that the Valdez and the Guerrero collections, that they came to rest in the same archival location. Both collections are rich in the syncretism of Mexican and Chicano content. Manuel Peña, who writes in Lalo Guerrero's autobiography, he makes a point that Lalo's treasury of swing-style tunes, especially his 1940s-era Vamos a Bailar and Marijuana Boogie, marked one of the first examples of music that was composed in a bicultural, bilingual musical style, incorporating both Mexican and Latino American sensibilities. So he goes on to say that in connection with his invention of the Mexican-American boogie, Lalo also developed a thoroughly unique bi-musical orchestra sound that synthesized the boogie version of big band swing and the Afro-Hispanic sound that eventually came to be known as salsa. And the result was an arresting synthesis that perfectly mirrored the biculturalism of Mexican Americans as expressed in their speech, in their dress, and even in culinary habits. And in the following track, Lalo discusses the Los Angeles swing music era.
In the early part of his career, he focused on writing and performing Mexican traditional music. But in the 1940s, while living in Los Angeles, Lalo's musical palette was enhanced by swing music. He blended swing with the mambo, guaracha, and other Latin American dance forms of the 1940s to create a unique hybrid sound that caught the attention of angelinos. The Chicano youth, known as pachucos or suit tutors, also embraced Lalo's sound, since he sang many of his songs in caló, the pachuco dialect. Lalo wrote many Latin swing songs that were later used in the Broadway play and film, Suit Suit, written by Luis Valdez. Lalo vividly recalls the nightlife and the dance clubs that made Los Angeles the happening place to be in the mid and late 1940s.
And the ambience of Los Angeles at that time was just incredible. It was beautiful. There was no smog. Secondly, there was no violence of any consequence. And Mexican people, which were the 99% of the people of Latin extraction, were Mexican. Hadn't had the influx yet of people from Central and South America. So it was just like living in Mexico. And we had the Million Dollar Theater, as you mentioned, also on Broadway, and we had the Teatro Blanquita on Whittier. And the nightclubs were incredible. Downtown, gosh, we had the Bamba Club, we had El Sombrero, we had El Bolero, we had Paramount Ballroom. We had big dances when the big attractions would come from Mexico, La Sonora Santanera, and from New York we'd have Machito and Tito Rodriguez and those people. They would come to the Palladium for the big dances. And then, of course, at that time in the 50s, we had great nightclubs in Beverly Hills and Hollywood, which was the Mocambo, the Trocadero, Ciro's, and the bands there were Latin bands, and they were all Chicanos. Great, great Chicano musicians. The ones you hear on that cassette I gave you, the classics, they're all guys that worked in those clubs. Wow. And those were real luxury nightclubs, you know, Latino, and they played nothing but Latin music, rumba and guaracha and merengue, and you would see all the stars there. I worked at the Mocambo, I worked at the Bamba Club. I saw people all the time there, like Anthony Quinn, John Garfield, stars of that era, which you may have heard of. The young man that was killed in the automobile wreck, what was his name?
James Dean.
James Dean, who used to hang out there. And some of the older stars like Rita Hayworth, Ann Sheridan, and Mae West would come in a lot. So the ambiente of Los Angeles was incredible. And of course we had the Pachucos. Oh, yeah. And their clubs were downtown in El Hoyo. There was a place downstairs in a cellar, it was called El Hoyo. They'd hang out there. And they'd hang out at the Bamba Club downtown. And that's where I got to meet them, and I was playing at the Bamba Club. I was the vocalist with the band, and these guys would come in all dressed really sharp, you know, with the drapes and the tandos and the carlango and the whole thing. That's when I was inspired to write, because I used to love to dance what was then swing. It was sort of like a jitterbug, what they called. And we would play Latin music, but we'd throw in a few of these popular American swing tunes of the time. And I said, why not have swing tunes with Spanish lyrics, you know, for the raza, for the Pachucos particularly. And I got inspired to write that, and that's when I wrote the music, Los Chucos Suaves, Vamos a Bailar, Marihuana Boogie, and Chicas Patas Boogie, that eventually wound up in the play written by Luis Valdez back in the foreword in what year was it, 1980?
78.
It said 1978. And I wrote them in about 30 years before. When Luis wrote the play, he was looking for music from that period, and I was fortunate enough that he found my old 78 RPM records.
Lalo's wide range of musical interests as well as his sense of humor brings me to the subject of his parodies. In 1950s, he made America laugh with his satires such as Pancho Lopez, sung to the tune of Davy Crockett, and he also had some fun with his I Left My Car in San Francisco, also his Elvis Perez, and you know, he admits in his book, which I have a copy of it here, just published by the University of Arizona, Lalo, My Life in Music. There's some really funny anecdotes here about how Walt Disney caught on to the fact that they were using this music that belonged to them, and they hadn't asked for permission. And so they were in a meeting with all these suits, and it was just him and his buddies, and you know, they didn't really own much of anything. They were just getting started. And here this Pancho Lopez song had just, you know, was become a national craze, and so Walt Disney wanted to, you know, confront them about this, but in a positive way, and they said, well, look, you know, you've got some really clever lyrics, but, you know, we own the music. And, you know, they weren't approached and for the permission. So they said, look, you know, we don't really want to do a lawsuit. We don't want to get involved in a lawsuit, but maybe there's a way we can, you know, share the revenues. You know, why don't we do this? We propose that, you know, we share the revenues 50-50. Your group for the lyrics and us for the music, you know. And so the Lalo and his group, they were just all excited about that because, you know, they didn't want a lawsuit. They were happy to share with the royalties with Walt Disney. And so the Ballad of Pancho Lopez was the first a big hit in English, selling close to 1 million records, reaching number 3 on the Latin charts in this country. And then by then it already made it to the top 10 list in most of Latin America. And reflecting on this period, Lalo states in his book, everywhere I played, I shared the building with Pancho. Sometimes I even wore a serape and sombrero with my suit. He sang that song on national television on The Tonight Show with Steve Allen. The Art Linkletter Show and Pancho Lopez got more national attention in Time Magazine and other general interest magazines of the time. And the success of that one record was such that with the royalties, with his side of the royalties, he was able to buy his nightclub, Lalo's, in East Los Angeles. An image from his Pancho Lopez recording fame days. And in the 1960s, Lalo also entertained Latin America's children with about 20 albums recorded by EMI Capitol Records in Mexico, devoted to children and aided by three chipmunk characters called in Spanish Las Ardillitas. And one of the songs in the series was El Hustle de las Ardillitas, or in English, The Chipmunk Hustle. And Lalo writes in his memoirs that, ironically, after many years of trying to make a record in Mexico, the first one he got to record in Mexico City was as a squirrel. So the next track is a commentary on Lalo's parodies.
Lalo created a new song style by taking popular American music and converting it into bilingual bicultural parodies that were very successful in the Southwest, with Chicanos, and people from all walks of life. For example, Lalo takes the song Cocktails for Two and converts it into Tacos for Two. The song is filled with Lalo's sense of humor and wit.
That's where I met my love one day. T'was a romantic rendezvous, and as she sighed, she ordered tacos for two. The darn tortilla was too hard, and it was dripping so much lard. Her eyes ablaze, and then I knew.
Lalo even plays around with "Twas the Night Before Christmas" and converts it into Pancho Claus, a song about a Chicano Santa Claus who pays a visit to a barrio, a neighborhood, on Christmas Eve.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the casa, Mama, she was busy preparing the masa to make the tamales for the tamalada and all the ingredients for the enchiladas. Papa in the front room with all the muchachas was dancing the mambo and doing the cha-cha. My brothers and sisters were out in the hall listening to Elvis singing rock and roll."
Okay, Lalo's music has done more than just entertain. Lalo uses music to express his concern over political and social concerns involving the Chicano community. It's given a voice to his people. His songs have told of the triumphs and the struggles of Mexican-American heroes like Cesar Chavez, Ruben Salazar, and brought their stories to a wide audience. Lalo's music has done more than any other, not only to celebrate the Mexican-American heritage, but to call attention to the disparities that gave rise to the farm labor movement and the Chicano movement. His love and his concern for his Chicano people soon had him traveling to farming areas where he championed farm workers' causes, writing and singing songs about Cesar Chavez and calling for the decent treatment of agricultural laborers. Lalo also brought his unique brand of humor to bear on his songs of social protest, such as No Chicanos on TV. In this instance, he takes aim at the mainstream television industry that has, by and large, failed to project the presence of Mexican-Americans on the small screen, despite the growing demographic and economic presence of the Latino community.
Lalo has also utilized his music to address political issues that are important to him and to the Chicano community. A few years ago, Lalo wrote a song titled There Are No Chicanos on TV, to address the fact that although Latinos constitute the largest growing ethnic group in the United States, they remain excluded and virtually non-existent on mainstream U.S. television. The song was recorded during a live performance in San Luis Obispo County in 1995.
We're a very large economic force now,
Hispanics, and we don't have enough representation on television. I mean on American television. We have the Mexican channel. So I wrote this, and it's getting a lot of attention. I think that I shall never see any Chicanos on TV. It seems as though we don't exist, and we're not ever even missed. And yet we buy and buy their wares, but no Chicanos anywhere. We need more color on TV, 'cause black and white is all you see. I'd like to see a shade of brown. In real life, we're all around. All kinds of TV shows abound, but no Chicanos can be found. There are Chicanos in real life. Doctors, lawyers, husbands, wives. But all they show us on TV are illegal aliens as they flee, or some poor cholo that they bust. Flat on his face, he's eating dust. Script writers never write for us. I think it's time we made a fuss. Casting directors never call. They never think of us at all. Edward James Olmos and Montalban. That's all we've got, son of a gun. Don't buy the product if you see there's no Chicanos on TV. Huggies has its three babies, white and black and Japanese. Chicano babies also pee, but they don't show them on TV.
What a riot.
Right?
What a riot. He's really a character. This slide here depicts the signing of the gift agreement for the collection with university librarian Sarah Pritchard here at UCSB. This was followed by an autograph signing of the event program after the ceremony, and depicted here. And when we established the Guerrero collection, we learned that there were about 700 titles of songs in Lalo's discography, and that his youngest son, Mark, who has his own recording company, had preserved much of his father's recordings on vinyl discs, and he'd already transferred to DAT about 100 of his father's 78s from Imperial Records, as well as several hundred 45s. He also had in his possession most of the discs from his father's work with Colonial Records. And now the rights to those masters of the original Imperial record label are now owned by EMI Capitol Records. Now, we're housing the recorded materials in the collection in their original formats whenever possible, and then we'll be reformatting the video and the audio recordings as part of a broader preservation access initiative in the Davidson Library's record recorded sound collections, working in collaboration with our David Soybert over here. The donors were made aware that what we'll be doing is identifying the optimal preservation medium and solutions for the eventual reformatting of donated audiovisual materials in the collection. And I should add that the Guerrero family was very interested not only in preservation, but also they encouraged us to provide broad multimedia access whenever possible via the World Wide Web. And therefore, as we process the collection and we do all the necessary conservation work, part of our work plan will also be to identify multimedia source material that we can then add to the web. Moreover, we agreed to work in a cooperative venture in a spirit with other institutions, such as the University of Arizona in his hometown, that may be interested in digital surrogates from the material in the collection to support exhibitions and displays on Lalo's life. Now, Frank Burke, writing in his book Research and the Manuscript Tradition, he points out that to understand history, we must try to reconstruct a past that is at best documented spasmodically in condensed time and in various media. Moreover, in the context of Chicano music history, as was the case with literature and the visual arts, there are bound to be issues of race, language, social, and political marginalization of Mexican Americans that for many years were also reflected in the collecting policies of libraries and archives. Unfortunately, there's a tremendous need for closing the huge gaps in the historical record of the Chicano experience, especially as it's preserved in institutions of higher learning, such as my own campus at UCSB, and particularly in the area of Chicano music history. Chicano scholars placed a span of Chicano or Mexican-American history over a 400-year period, but although there are some notable exceptions, until very recently, the documentary record of the Mexican-American cultural presence had not really factored into the collection policies of many institutions. And so I wish to give great credit to Lalo Guerrero, to his sons Dan and Mark, and the family for their wisdom in having made what I think is a very important decision to add to our body of knowledge about Mexican-American music through the life and work of Lalo Guerrero. Thanks. If there's any questions.
Do you have any questions? We have a couple minutes.
Not as of yet, because we're working on the intellectual control over the collection. This collection will be processed. The completion of the processing will happen in the fall, this coming fall, and then after that, then we'll be working with them on making selections of work that will be on the internet. Yeah, and of course we need to make sure that we also, if there's selections that Lalo does not have any control over, that we secure the necessary rights as well. That's it? Oh, okay. One more?
I was just curious, in reference to the collection, you've spoken a lot about recordings. I was just wondering to what extent there are manuscript sheets or
There's really a little bit of that. And quite frankly, Lalo never really archived his collection. He never really did anything systematic to maintain his collection and make sure that he preserved copies and drafts of music. You know, he would toss things left and right. And his son, Dan, I give him a lot of credit because his son was very careful about gathering. He knew how important it would be for future researchers and historians to be able to access materials on his dad, and carefully gathered together and solicited materials and photographs and scrapbooks and clippings, and there are some lyric sheets, but there's not that many in the collection. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do I get to keep the book? Thank you. Although, that's beautiful music.